Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Yuma Daf Nun Aleph. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you're not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin today's shiur on Daf Nun Aleph 9 lines from the top. Before we begin the Gemara, let us take advantage of the introductory note, the topic heading that you see on the side of the Gemara under our Nosei, a topic, where we've written Loma HaTano Li'el on Nun Omed Aleph. Why did the Tano? That is a reference to a Tanaic source that we saw back on Nun Amud Aleph, Korei L'Chagiga Korban Tzibor. Why did he refer to the Chagiga sacrifice? This is a sacrifice that members of Klal Yisrael, the Jewish people, would bring, basically individually, they would bring the Korban Chagiga on the holidays. You have three pilgrimage holidays. There are holidays we refer to as Aliyas HaRegel, where the public would come to Jerusalem on the holidays of Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkot, and they would bring with them a Korban Chagiga. Back on Nun Amud Aleph, and we have reference points here that in the Gemara text, where we use a double star, you'll be able to refer back to Nun Omen Aleph, to the point that is of concern to us, where reference is made to the Korban Chagiga as a Korban Tzibor. So the question right now is, why does the Tana refer to the Korban Chagiga as a public sacrifice when, as we described, individuals, private people, bring it on the holidays? So we now turn to the Gemara itself. As we said, 9 lines from the top, we have a question. Notice the long question marking. Omar le Rav Huna bre Rav Yeshua le Rava. V'tana, mai shno Pesach de kore le korban yochid. Why back on daf nun omen aleph? Again, use your double star marking and scroll back or turn back to daf nun omen aleph. And you see that in the Tanaic sources presented there, the Tana referred to the Korban Pesach as a Korban Yochid, Umayshna Chagiga to Kori Lo Korban Tzibor. And why did he refer to the Korban Chagiga as a public sacrifice? Imishum Da'asi Bikinufya, if the Chagiga was referred to as a public sacrifice because it comes Bikinufya, when everyone is gathered. Kinufya is a reference to a gathering, when all the Jews are present, so it gives you the public impression. Everyone is there doing it. Well, Pesach Nami Asi Bekenufya, the Korban Pesach brought on the 14th of Nisan. We've learned in Maseches Pesachim there may have very well been millions of those Korbanos being brought. Hundreds of thousands for sure. So could you imagine a greater kinufya than that? And yet, the Tana refers to the Pesach as a Korban Yochid. So the fact that something is brought in a gathering wouldn't be grounds for calling the Korban Chagiga a Korban Tzibor. The Gemara answers, Iko Pesach Sheni, the Lo Osi, the kinufya. The source, back on Daf Nun, Omer Aleph, when it referred to the Pesach, it wasn't referring to the Pesach brought on the 14th of Nisan. It was a reference to the makeup Pesach, the Pesach brought on the 14th of Iyar, a month after the formal Korban Pesach. And that was brought truly by private people, by individuals, those people who could not have brought the Korban Pesach on the 14th of Nisan. So the classification of the Korban Chagiga being a Korban Tzibor based on Kinufya, based on its being brought as by individuals, but as part of the masses, that is a good explanation. Omar Lay, so He then asks, Im Kain, if the Pesach referred to back there on Daf Nun Amud Aleph was the Pesach Sheni, Yehe Doiche Es HaShabbos V'es HaTuma, then it should be able to supersede Shabbos and Tuma, like it said back on Daf Nun Amud Aleph, where it mentioned that the Pesach had those characteristics. So you're then telling me that the Korban Pesach is really Pesach Sheni, and it's Doiche Shabbos and Tuma. Is that really so? So the Gemara says, Omar lay in. Yep, that's what I'm saying. Keman de Omar Dochi. In conformity to the Tanaic opinion, and it will be Rebbe Yehuda that we'll see in a moment, that says the Pesach Sheni is a korban that supersedes Shabbos and Tuma. Desanyo, the source tells us about the Pesach Sheni, the makeup korban Pesach on the 14th of Iyar. Pesach Sheni Doiche Es HaShabbos. If the 14th of Iyar coincides with the Shabbos, it will be brought. V'eino Doiche Es HaTuma, but it won't be brought in a state of impurity. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Af Doiche Es HaTuma. The Pesach Sheni will be brought even in a state of tuma if there's no other choice. My time of the Tanakama, why does the Tanakama hold that Pesach Sheni does not supersede tuma? Omar Loch, so he will answer. Vipnei tuma dachiso, v'yaseh betuma. Here the intonation is important. It's an intonation of wonderment. You said about the Pesach Sheni, it's brought because of tuma that the person was experiencing during Pesach Rishon, during the 14th of Nisan. So he was pushed off. He was delayed till the Pesach Sheni because of tuma. You can now say he can bring it in a state of tuma. The whole purpose of the Pesach Sheni was to achieve a state of tahara when bringing it. So it wouldn't make sense, according to this approach, the approach of the Tanakama, to bring it in a state of tuma. For Rabbi Yehuda Amar Loch, Rabbi Yehuda, who held otherwise, he will tell you, Omar Kra, the Pasuk says regarding the Pesach Sheni, Kechol Chukas HaPesach Yasu Oso. It has all the characteristics of the original Korban Pesach. Ve'afilu betuma. It's brought even in a state of tuma. Now, what does that mean? The original Korban Pesach, when individuals were tamei, it wasn't brought in a state of tuma. So the Gemara explains, HaTorah hichzira olav lasoso betara. The Torah was seeking out the opportunity for a person to do the Pesach in a state of purity. Lo zochef, he didn't merit it. Yasenu betuma, so he shall do it in a state of tuma. Parenthetically, it may be noted that a Korban Pesach, when the original Korban Pesach is being brought in a situation where the majority of the tzibor was tomei, it would be brought in a state of tuma. The Pesach Sheni is a contingency for a case where the original Pesach was brought when the majority of people were tor and only the minority or individuals were tomei. So this makeup possibility is accounted for by the Torah. However, Rabbi Yehuda goes on to say that if he didn't merit doing the original one in a state of tahara, and now he's at Pesach Sheni, and he's still not Torah, then he shall do it in a state of tuma. We continue at the top of Amud Beis. The Gemara says, V'tepuk li. Now, in order to appreciate this, you have to learn the Rashi. It's an amazing stroke of the Gemara right now, because the Gemara is flipping back to something that was mentioned before we opened today's shiur. It's going all the way back to the Gemara on Nun Amud Beis. The Gemara there was discussing the par of the Kohen Gadol and its ability to do tumurah. This was a question that, if you have Nun on the base in front of you, the question was raised by Rebbe Lozer at the fifth line from the top of Nun Amid Beis, regarding the power of the Kohen Gadol. Does it serve as the basis of Tumura or not? That Tumura is the replication of sanctity of an original sacrifice. Can the power Kohen Gadol lend itself to Tumura, sanctity replication? And there, the Gemara on Nun Amid Beis said the analysis of that is dependent on whether the fellow Kohanim that gain some level of atonement along with the Kohen Gadol, if they are considered full partners, which the Gemara used the term Bekevusa Miskapri, and then it would not lend itself to Mur because it's no longer a private sacrifice. And we explain this at great length in our previous shiur, so as to not be guilty of over-explanation. For those who heard the previous year, we're going to just leave things at that. If you're a new time listener, then kindly tune into the previous year for more information. However, if you say that the fellow Kohanim and their atonement in the Par Kohen Gadol was Bekufya, that it was only a superficial, loose type of connection with it, so then the Par Kohen Gadol would be classified as a private sacrifice, hence lending itself to Tumura replication, which applies only to private sacrifices. So here the Gemara is referring back to that, and notice how careful Rashi is. Rashi is all the time structure sensitive. And he says at the top, the Tepukli Baya de Rebbe Lozer Liel. This is a Tepukli means derive, a response, a conclusion to Rebbe Lozer's question from before on Daf Nun Amid Beis, where he asked, does the par Kohen Gadol lend itself to Tumur or not? The par Yom HaKippurim, the Kohanim, that's the par of the Kohen Gadol, and its relationship to the other kind of Bekufya, who the Miskapri Bey. It's only through a loose, floating type connection do they receive their atonement. The Asher Lo, Kosa Bey, Tlosa Zimni. The term Asher Lo means his. In a private, in a singular sense, his, the Kohen Gadol's, or Aaron, who was the original Kohen Gadol, his cow. It says his private, his cow, three times. Lemute Tzibur, the Echov HaKohanim, it comes to exclude the public fellow Kohanim, the Lo Mididhu Osi. The funds used to purchase it shall not come from the public, nor from fellow Kohanim. Tlosa Shalok Sivibay, Betray Kroy. The term Asher Lo is repeated three times in two psukim in Vayikra Perek Tezayin. And where are they? So in Pasuk Vov, Vehikriv Aroin, and it says there, and Vehikriv Tanino in Pasuk Yud Aleph, Veshachar Esparachatas Asher Lo, and you'll have in those psukim three references to or use of the term Asher Lo. Why is that so important? It would hammer home the point that it's his in the private sense. So if you understand that, so that would be the basis of resolving Rebbe Lozer's original question. The issue then is, if that be the case, so why did Rebbe Lozer even ask the question in the first place? If it's so clear, and that's what the Gemara here is asking. The term Asher Lo is repeated so much in the Torah, indicating it's funded by Aaron out of his own pocket. So obviously, the other Kohanim are really very loosely associated with it. And if that be the case, it's clear then, it should be clear that the Par Kohen Gadol is Oiset Tmura, leaving almost no room for Rebbe Lozer to even ask his question back there on Daf Nun Amid Beis. So what the role of this Gemara is, its role or its goal is to establish a a firm basis for Reb Elozer even to ask his question in the first place. So now, let's see the Gemara. But typically, why not conclude, in other words, why didn't Reb Elozer conclude his issue by virtue of the psukim, da asher lo am rachmona? And that means, mishalo, who may be, that he funds the par out of his own pocket, the sanya. The Tanaic source clarifies this point. Asher lo means mishalo hi mevi, velo mishal tzibor. He brings from out of pocket funds, not from public funds. Yocholo yovi mishal tzibor. Maybe you'll say, well, he's not going to use public funds. The tzibor doesn't achieve atonement through the par cow offering of Yom Kippur. Avol yovi mishal echov hakoyanim. Maybe though he takes funds, he makes a collection from his fellow Kohanim, Shereyachov HaKonim Miskaprimbo, they do achieve some level of atonement through the cow offering of the Kohen Gadol. Tamar Lomar, Asher Lo, the Torah repeats itself, Asher Lo, meaning not from them. Yocho Lo Yovi Vimhevi Kosher, you might say, okay, the Kohen Gadol is not to make a collection from them, but if he does, the Korban would be acceptable. Talmud Lomar, Shuv, Asher Lo. The Pasuk repeats itself a third time. Shona Olav HaKosuv Lakev. Shona means something that's repeated. And Rashi says, repeated three times. So in addition to the original statement of Asher Lo, it's then a double repetition after that, indicating Lakev, that it's binding, that it shall come from out-of-pocket personal funds only. Now, that having been said, it would appear that the association of the other Kohanim with the Par Kohen Gadol is very superficial. And as such, it should have been clear to Reb Elozer from the outset that the Par Oisa Temura. So why was he even raising the question? So now the Gemara answers, and when we say answers, it means the Gemara now gives a basis for Reb Elozer to have asked his question in the first place. Back on the Daf Nun Amud Beis, the Gemara explains, "V'letamech echov haKohanim." Now, according to you, that you're trying to argue that the other Kohanim are fairly disconnected. Well, what looking at them, ilav dekonu begavei hechi mechaper luhu af bekufya, if they don't have a holding in it, so then how do they get atonement even on the loose floating sense? In other words, it would appear that things should be black and white. If they are, as you're claiming in the source, as the source seems to convey, that they are disconnected, and certainly that's the case from a financial standpoint, then how is it that they get even the low-level atonement that is referred to by the term kufya, the floating, loose-type connection, but there is a connection? Elo, so rather, you're going to have to say shiny begoz of the Aaron. The begoz is the treasury, the money, the funds of Aaron are different. The afkirei rachmona gabi echov hakoyanim. The word afkirei is hefker. The rachmonas, the Torah declares that the funds of Aaron are associated with his fellow Kohanim as well. In other words, the Torah itself, the law, the Torah, the Kodesh Baruch Hu says, I know, Aaron, you've got money in your pocket, but your money is associated in a certain form with your brethren Kohanim as well. Hocha gabi tmura nami, here too, with regard to tmura, which was the issue that Reb Elozer was dealing with, and even though the par kohen gadol is classified as a korban yochid, nevertheless, shiny begozad aron de'afkirei rachmona gabi echov hakoyhanim, and the Torah declares Aaron's funds as being connected with his brethren Kohanim as well, and the Bach adds something very interesting here, and he says v'yesh lomar dimiskapro b'kviusa, and that they achieve kapora through a firm, established, full-fledged partnership type kapora. And if you say that, so that would be the side of the argument or the question that Reb Elozer had raised, that it would not be able to make tmura, because tmura is that which is singular, privately owned. But once you introduce this factor, this concept of shiny begozo de Aaron, the af kedei rachmona, that the Torah declares it hefker, or owned by this brethren kohanim, so the question, as we said, of tmura comes up all over again. Namely, on the one hand, we see asher lo, we see it comes from private sources, meaning it's purely private. And if it's purely private, so then there would be a tmura possibility, because tmura is based on a sacrifice that is considered yochid, privately owned. On the other hand, we see that they, other the brethren kohanim, are associated with it. Well, and what is how is that? Because of this concept of Begoza de Aaron afki rachmona. Well, if they're associated with it, maybe when the Torah declares it Hefker legabi bnei Aaron, it's hefker, it's considered theirs as well. Maybe it's theirs as well all the way to the extent that their kapora is bekvi'usa. And these are terms that we saw back on Nun Omid Beis. And if it's bekvi'usa, so then it would not lend itself to tmur, being that it has this public or partnership nature to it. So what we have shown just now in the last 2-3 minutes in our review remarks, that there is a basis for Reb Elozer to wonder about the par kohen gadol and its ability to be the basis of tmura or not. We continue with the Mishnah, and before we do that, we glance at the side under our nosei, our topic heading. And we've written as follows: Knisas Kohen Gadol leKodesh HaKadoshim laHaktir Akteres. The Mishnah starts the topic of the Kohen Gadol and his trip, his journey into the Holy of Holies for the purpose of offering the incense offering. The Tiur HaParoches Amafrid Bein HaHechal leKodesh HaKadoshim. We'll be dealing with a description of the curtain, or we'll see later, possibly curtains that separate the Holy of Holies, the Kodesh HaKadoshim, from the Heichal, from the rest of the Heichal, the part of the closed structure of the Beis HaMikdash that included, that contained the Shulchan Menorah and the Golden Mizbeach. Now, the Mishnah. Hoya Mahalech Beheichal Ad Shemagia Lebein Shtei HaParoches HaMavdilois Bein HaKodesh Bein Kodesh HaKadoshim. The Kohen walked through the Heichal until he got to the point between the two curtains that separated the Kodesh from the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Kodesh is the holy area, and the Kodesh HaKadoshim is the Holy of Holies, where the Aron Bris Hashem that contained the Luchos in the first Beis HaMikdash, where it was located, where the Holy Ark containing the Ten Commandments was situated. Ubeinehem Amo. We made reference to two curtains. Beinehem means between them. There is a space of an Amo. So there was an airspace between the two curtains. It's important to have a sense of direction when discussing topics like this. The Heichal would be entered from the east, and as you walk in a westerly direction, you are walking toward the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So the two curtains were positioned parallel to one another, one more easterly than the other. So you have a gap of an amo between the two curtains. Omer Rav Yossi. Rav Yossi says, Lo hoysa shom elo paroches achas bilvad. As far as Rav Yossi is concerned, there was only one curtain. Shenemar, the Pasuk says, Vivdila haparoches lochem bein hakidesh ubein kodesh hakadoshim. The curtain, and it's in the singular, the curtain divided between the Kodesh area and the Kodesh HaKadoshim area. So the Gemara says, Shapir Koma Lahu Rabbi Yossi L'Rabbonan. It would appear that Rabbi Yossi is on firm ground in his response to the Rabbonan, that there was only one paroches. What do the Rabbonan have to say about that, in, certainly in view of the fact that he quoted his posuk? The Gemara answers, notice it's a long answer. The Rabbonan Amri Loch, the Rabbonan that said that there were two curtains, they will tell you, Hani Mili B'Mishkan. It is true there was one curtain that was in the Mishkan. The Mishkan was the, in English it's referred to as the tabernacle. It was a portable type Beis HaMikdash that traveled with the Jews through the Midbar during their exodus from Mitzrayim. So in the Mishkan, there was one curtain, Avol B'Mikdash Sheni, in the second Beis HaMikdash, Kevon Delo Havoi Amo Traxin, Uva Mikdash Rishon Hu Dehavoi. In the second Beis HaMikdash, as opposed to the first temple, the first Beis HaMikdash was built by King Solomon, by Shlomo HaMelech, and it stood for a period of 410 years. As opposed to that, there was the second Beis HaMikdash that was built during the time of Ezra, it was built by Nehemiah, Zerubbabel, and company of those who returned from the Babylonian exile. In the second Beis HaMikdash, which stood for 420 years, there was no wall, there was no Amo Traxin, which was the expression used in the Gemara for a wall, that, as its name indicates, an Amo means that it was an Amo, thick wall. An Amo, you can assume, is approximately a half a meter in thickness. So that wall, an Amo thick, was not present in the second Beis HaMikdash, and it was present in the first Beis HaMikdash. So in the absence of that Amo thick wall, two curtains were set up with an Amo gap between them. The Istapkelu l'Rabbanan, the Rabbanan had an element of doubt, b'kedusha say, the level of sanctity that the wall occupied, an Amo thick wall that was present in the first Beis HaMikdash, what level of sanctity did it have? Ikilifnim, ikilachutz, did it have? Did that Amo have Kodesh HaKodashim sanctity, or lachutz outside of that, meaning the Heichal level sanctity? And the different sanctity levels have ramifications for practical law. So they had a doubt concerning what sanctity level it had. The Avud Shtei Parochas. And as a result of that, they set up two curtains whereby the more easterly curtain was clearly Heichal Kedusha, and the more westerly curtain, on the other side of the more westerly curtain, was clearly Kodesh HaKadoshim. And as far as the area between them, so that was in doubt. So as far as, let us say, Kohanim wandering over there or walking over, they were blocked off by the more easterly curtain. The Gemara continues concerning the topic of the Kohen Gadol's trip or journey into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. And on the side of the Gemara, we have this as our topic. Under the Nosei heading, we've written Maslul HaKohen Gadol, the path of the Kohen Gadol, Likras Knisosa LeKodesh HaKadoshim, in anticipation of his entrance into the Holy of Holies. We'll be using a crude diagram, a very superficial type diagram that you have on the side of the Gemara, where we've noted the four directions, Mizrach east, and then Dorom south, Marov west, and Tzafon north. And we have, this is of course an aerial view, so you have the Shulchan position. The Shulchan had the 12 Lechem Haponim, the 12 showbreads that sat on it from week to week. And in the Heichal there was also the menorah, the candelabra, the seven-branched candelabra, and there was a golden altar. And its position was, it was drawn a bit more easterly than the Shulchan, which stood directly opposite the menorah. Reference will be made, and especially if you learn Rashi, to the following point, that in the Beis HaMikdash that Shlomo HaMelech built, in addition to the formal shulchan that Moshe Rabbeinu made, he made 10 additional shulchanos that stood on 5 and 5 on either side of the original shulchan. Now, how they were positioned, were they lined up north, south, or east, west, that is a machlokas. That will be of some significance later as we go on in the Gemara. As you glance at the upcoming source, you'll see three opinions featured. And without any further ado, Tonu Rabbanan, Bein HaMizbeach LaMenorah Hoya Mahalech, Divrei Rebbe Yehuda. If you want to use the little diagram on the side of the Gemara, you'll notice he entered from the east, and he would work his way between the Mizbeach and the Menorah. And he would take a path like that in approaching the curtains. Rebbe Meir Omer, Bein Shulchan LaMizbeach. That would be a slightly more northerly type route. V'yesh Omrim, a third opinion says, Bein Shulchan LaKoysel. He would skirt his way along the wall, the northern wall, walking between the Shulchan and the wall, toward the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Man Yesh Omrim. Who is the name behind this Yesh Omrim? Who is that? Omar Rav Chisda, Rav Yosi Hi. This is in accordance with Rav Yosi. The Omar Rav Yosi who holds Pischa Betzafon Koit. The entrance is along the northern side. In other words, the curtain at its point where it comes into contact with the northern wall is drawn open a bit. Rebbe Yehuda, Omar Loch, Pischa Bedorom Koi. Rebbe Yehuda, who had him traveling, had him walking between the Mizbeach and the menorah being the vessel located in the southern part of the Heichal. So, according to Rebbe Yehuda, the opening was in the southern part of the Heichal. If we glance at Rashi, across from Pischa Bedorom Koi, the Shtei Poroches Hoyusham, there were two curtains, as we alluded to earlier, Vachitsona Prufa Minadorom. The more easterly curtain is called the outer curtain, is called drawn open a bit from the south. So the more easterly curtain was drawn open a bit, drawn away from the wall on its southern edge. Kidisnan Masnisin, and this is mentioned in the Mishnah on Nun Beis Omid Beis. Ulekamen Poruch Rebbe Yehuda Nail Bein Menorah LaKoysel. According to this approach, then why doesn't, according to Rebbe Yehuda, the Kohen Gadol simply skirt against the within the southern wall between the wall and the menorah? We continue in the Gemara. Rebbe Meir Keman Svirolei. According to Rebbe Meir, who had him traveling between the Mizbeach and the Shulchan, who does he hold like with regard to the opening of the curtain? Ika Rebbe Yehuda Svirolei. If he holds like Rebbe Yehuda, then, and Rebbe Yehuda said that Pischa Bedorom, the nail Ika Rebbe Yehuda, then why doesn't he follow the route as prescribed by Rebbe Yehuda, who had him walking between the Mizbeach and Menorah? Ika Rebbe Yosi Svirolei. Then nail Rebbe Yosi, and if he Rebbe Meir holds like Rebbe Yosi, then have him walk in like Rebbe Yosi says and skirt along the northern wall. The more answers the Olam Rebbe Yosi Svirolei. He holds like Rebbe Yosi that the eastern curtain was drawn open, or the curtain according to Rebbe Yosi was only one curtain. So, but it was drawn open from the northern edge. The Omar Loch, and if the issue is, if he holds like Rebbe Yosi, so why doesn't he skirt along the wall like Rebbe Yosi said? Well, because Rabbi Meir will tell you, Shulchanos Tzafon V'Dorom Munachim. Umifsika Le Shulchan V'lo Mesayo Le. And here we have another, again, it's a crude diagram, but we have a setup of the tables, and you see the number 2 that is marked. Again, this is an aerial view that we're looking at in this diagram. You can see them as Be'ach, with its 4 corners, and you have a setup of tables. There are 5 tables running across, and as in the length of each table was 2 amos. The width of the Heichal, the inner width, the airspace of the Heichal, measured 20 amos across. Now, the tables, according to Rabbi Meir, were positioned in their length north-south. So if they were positioned in their length north-south, and Rashi adds that a shulchan could not be at all the actual south, so it couldn't reach over the halfway mark, so the shulchanos took up, they blocked off the entire northern half of the Heichal, leaving no room for the Kohen Gadol to skirt along the northern wall. So that's why Rebbe Meir tells you he had to walk around the Mizbeach, and there's the northern side of the Mizbeach, walking between it and the Shulchan. He couldn't skirt against the wall, as we just said, because the Shulchanos, I'm reading again in the Gemara 4 lines from the bottom, Shulchanos Sofen V'dorim Menochem U'mifsiko Le Shulchan V'lo Misayo Le. And the mafsik means block. The Shulchanos blocked him, and we say the Shulchanos were referring to the additional Shulchanos that Shlomo HaMelech made. In our diagram, we're representing only 5 of those tables, but it's sufficient to show that the path along the northern wall would have been blocked. And that's why Rabbi Meir says that you walk between the Mizbeach and the Shulchan, and not like Rabbi Yossi, who had said, even though Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Meir agree that the Pesach is Betzafon. V'boyes Eimo, li'oilom Mizrachu Marov Munochem. Another approach will tell you that the Shulchanos were really positioned their lengths, their 2 amah lengths, really north-south. And if that be the case, there would have been room for the Kohen Gadol to skirt along the inside of the northern wall directly into the Kodesh HaKodashim. However, umishum shchino lav orach harabi. The question was, why doesn't he go straight in like Rabbi Yossi? So Reb Meir will tell you, because you're dealing with the divine presence that was located or concentrated in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, lav orach har, it's not derech eretz, it's not proper etiquette. The Gemara continues at the top of Nun Beis Amud Aleph, lemeal lehedya, to walk directly in. The feeling of Rabbi Meir would be to enter with a feeling of a bit of modesty, as opposed to walking straight in. And Rashi at the top says, "Lemeal lehedya leilach etzel hakosel atzoni, to walk along the inside of the northern wall kol iruch haechal, along the entire length of the echal v'chol shah einov nizonis beis kodesh hakadoshim derech aprifosh kenegdo." And adopting Rabbi Yossi's approach, Rabbi Meir is following Rabbi Yossi's approach about a singular curtain, so he would be walking along the northern wall with the curtain drawn open a bit from the northern edge, walking along the whole time, looking, gaping upon the Kodesh HaKadoshim. And the sentiment reflected here on the part of Rabbi Meir is that is lacking in derech eretz and lacking in proper refinement. What about Rabbi Yossi? Rabbi Yossi Yom Aloch? Rabbi Yossi, who says he does walk straight in, he says, Chavivin Yisrael Shelo Etzrichon HaKosev L'Shaliach. Beloved are the people of Israel. And here you have an incredibly important philosophical point that the Gemara says in 3-4 short words, Shelo Etzrichon HaKosev L'Shaliach. And this is where Judaism has its unique feature as opposed to many other religions of the world. Take a look at the Rashi. Rabbi Yossi Yomer lo, Chaviv in Yisrael, Shalei Tzrichon Nekosov L'Shliach, Elo Kol Echad Ve'echad Mispalel Al Atzmo. Every Jew prays for himself, on himself. And when the concept of no shliach, you don't need an emissary. The prayers of a person are between himself and the Almighty directly. No intermediaries. Even the whole concept of a shliach tzibur, he's not functioning as an intermediary per se, but he is functioning his original capacity was for those who are not fluent in the text, in the davening, in how to pray, so he would say it out loud, and by their listening, it's considered as if they are praying themselves. It's not a function of the need for some kind of intermediary. The Almighty, and this is a pillar of Judaism, is with you and me and every individual in a direct, personal connection without any need for anything in the middle. And hence, because of this directness, this close, direct relationship, and the Rashi quotes the Pasuk Shenemar, Pasuk from Shlomo Melech in his dedication of the temple, what its purpose was, Asher Yedun Ish Nega Levovo Uporas Kinofav El Abayas Hazeh. Person, every individual knew of his own suffering, would raise his hands, and the Beis Hamikdash was the primary location for prayer, if you will. Hilkul Chaviv Hu Shluchan Likonais Lepumbi. Therefore, the Kohen Gadol, who is the emissary, so to speak, on behalf of the Jewish people, he represents each individual. So it sounds a little contradictory. We just spoke a moment ago about not needing an intermediary. Here we are talking about intermediary. No, he's not an intermediary. There's a concept in halacha of shlucho shel adam kamoso. The person who is sent is like you are sent in there. So that in an ultimate sense, and we can just add another point based on the Gemara in Brachas, a very fascinating idea that the Beis Hamikdash is referred to as talpios. And the Gemara in Brachas Darshan's tale shekola pios ponim elov, the mountain, the hill that all mouths are turned to. And this figures in halacha that when one is davening, when one is praying, he optimally should position himself in the direction of the Beis Hamikdash. And the Gemara there goes so far as to say that a person ultimately should imagine himself as standing in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. It's such an amazing thing. And this applies three times a day, not just on Yom Kippur. Here the Kohen Gadol entered once a year. But you, when you're praying, Mr. Private Jew is praying, he is in the Kodesh HaKadoshim three times every day. And on Shabbos, it could be four times, Yom Kippur five times. Every day in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, that is how one's mind should be focused. So you can imagine then how, because of this closeness, there in Rabbi Yossi's perception, there is no violation of etiquette by walking directly in. We have a direct contact, direct relationship with the Shekhinah. Hence, there is no violation of etiquette by walking directly in. The Gemara continues, Rebbe Yehuda, Nami Neil Bain Menura Lakoy. So now Rebbe Yehuda, who spoke about the Pischa Bedorom, that the entrance was in the entrance where the curtain was pulled away, was drawn open a bit from the southern edge. Why doesn't he have the Kohen Gadol walk directly along the southern wall? Bain Menorah Lakosa, skirting along the menorah and the kosel, and we'll just assume that as far as Rebbe's position is concerned, there were two curtains. So as far as the issue of the gawking or gaping upon the Kodesh HaKadoshim, that wouldn't have been a problem necessarily according to Rebbe Yehuda. But nevertheless, since the Pesach, the eastern curtain was drawn open on the southern side, the southern edge, why doesn't he just walk along the southern wall between the menorah and the kosel? So the Gemara has a very practical answer why he didn't do that. Meshachri monei. Monei are his clothing. Meshachri means they would become blackened by the flames of the menorah, the smoke coming from the menorah, and his in this relatively close proximity to that would have resulted in his clothing being darkened, and that certainly we want to avoid. So Rabbi Yehuda says he walks in between the Mizbeach and the menorah, giving him more room to maneuver and distance himself from that smoke. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.